And good morning. Welcome to From the Stand. This morning, we hope to catch up with Mr. Sonics, John Manette, and as I mentioned, talk with two SR-71 pilots about their missions at the edge of space. But first, we're going to stay a little lower altitude-wise and talk about flying Air Force One. Greg Kahan is joining us today from the stand. Good morning and welcome back to Oshkosh.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yesterday, we talked with Lindy Kirkland, who flew Marine One, about the operations that happened between the White House and Air Force One. So today we'll pick up the rest of the story as you take the president to some far-flung places. But before we talk about Air Force One, let's talk a little bit about your background. You were in the Air Force. You were at the Air Force Academy. And you mentioned that was back in the day when they had actual gliders.
Yes, gliders without engines.
What concept. What were they using for tow planes at that time?
You know, I am not even positive what the airplane was. I was so overwhelmed. It was actually the first time I've ever been in the cockpit of an airplane. So
really? Really?
Yes.
So they brought you in and taught you how to fly without an engine.
Yes. So
it's a good way to start.
Yeah. If you can't survive without an engine, you'll probably never survive with an engine.
So. That's right. And in backing up even before the Air Force Academy, you told me before you're from the same area as airshow performer Mike Goulian.
Yeah, Mike and I were born in the same town right outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
All right.
And actually, I'm about a 9-iron away from the runway at Logan Airport, where
okay.
I grew up. So,
who has the better golf game, you or Mike?
Probably Mike.
Okay.
I don't get enough time to golf, and I know that he travels around and golfs pretty often.
Well, tell us a little bit about your progression. As we mentioned, the Air Force Academy, but how was your military career sort of tracked to get you to be in the cockpit of Air Force One?
Well, after I graduated from the Air Force Academy in 86, I went to pilot training, flew the T-37, T-38, like every Air Force pilot. And I actually, my first choice out of pilot training was to fly heavies, C-141s, which I did from 87 to 93 out of the East Coast and got around the world, which was my goal, was to see the world, and had enough of my high performance time in the T-38 and was ready to travel. When I finished my time in 93 in the C-141, I was chosen to fly Gulfstreams down at Andrews Air Force Base. Basically, it's the corporate flight department for the U.S. government. I flew G-3s and G-4s, and while I was there, I had a very high security clearance, which allowed me to fly presidential trips on the Gulfstreams. A lot of people don't know that the president does fly. Back in those days, it was on a G-3 for his short trips or his small runway operations. So I did a lot of that, and it led to me becoming a 747 pilot in 1997.
Okay.
At the time.
And you mentioned flying the heavy transports. You talked about flying the Thunderbirds around. So this is sort of a come full circle there.
Today. I did a summer where I was basically the transport for all the equipment and the lead teams that had to go in front of the actual, at the time it was F-16 still.
Right. So the C-17 that's coming in today, that's the advanced ship. That would have been the mission that you were flying in the 141?
Right. And C-17 was basically the replacement for the 141.
All right. Any good stories that you can share with the summer with the Thunderbirds? I'm sure there's stories, but it's whether you can share them or not.
Yeah, mostly dealing with locals when it came to the requirements of the Thunderbirds. And because we were transporting their equipment, we kind of got tied into their ambiance of requirements, even though we were just the working stiffs behind the scenes moving equipment for them.
But all right. So you mentioned the smaller airplanes that fly the president. What kind of operations are those? I mean, that's news to me. I always thought the president flew on the 747.
Yeah. For example, one trip we had, we went to New Zealand with President Clinton, and we would fly all the way to Auckland on the 747. But waiting for us was a G-3, and I would walk across the ramp, get on G-3, and fly him into, it was Queenstown at the time.
Okay.
A short runway in a valley, and no way a 747 obviously could operate there. So
Right. We
would just transfer off the 747 into the G-3 and get him to where he needed to go. But we did that everywhere, and, you know, I did it in Turkey and India and even as close as JFK for dinner type of things.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you were you got your type rating in the 747, but there has to be more to it to fly Air Force One than just having a rating, right?
Well, I like to say I was in the right place at the right time, because I was working so close with the president on the small airplane, kind of had a recognition, face recognition, and Air Force One, there's only 8 pilots at one time, and when one retires or for any other reason leaves, they usually choose from the Andrews pool of pilots.
Okay.
And because I was someone that he was already familiar with, he asked if I would become the next 747 pilot.
Wow, that's a must.
Yeah,
be
I was
quite
the youngest pilot there, a captain. We're in a unit which is only colonels, so.
Great. We're talking with Greg Cahan, who has some great experiences flying the president in Air Force One. How many different 747? I guess I should back up just so people know that it's not necessarily the airframe that's Air Force One. There's several different airframes.
Correct.
Like any aircraft.
Any Air Force airplane that the president is on is
considered
call sign is Air Force One.
All right. So how many 747s are ready for the president?
Only 2.
Okay.
2 identical, delivered within 6 months of each other back in 90, 91. There's 747-200s, which are called classics, which always upset me that I was starting in an airplane called a classic. But well-equipped, still very well-maintained, but looking to be replaced in the next probably 5 to 10 years.
Okay. And the replacement aircraft, will that be?
It hasn't been announced yet, but the front runner right now is the newest 747 model.
Okay. How many people are involved in maintaining those aircraft at Andrews?
There's a separate Air Force One maintenance squadron, and there's about 120 maintenance personnel, and they also take care of 757s in the Gulfstream if the Gulfstreams are there. So they're qualified on all those airplanes.
All right, we've seen the movies with all the special effects with 747 and Air Force One. Can you tell us if that's close to reality?
Depends on what special effects you're talking about.
Having flares and anti-missile.
Believe it or not, that's the about the only thing that I can't talk about on Air Force One. But it's well protected.
Okay. I figured that probably is still considered classified information. How did you set up a typical, if there was such a thing as a typical mission of moving the president from Washington to somewhere else? I mean, what was the process that
the typical process, the White House travel office would give us the trip, tell us what the trip is, and we had a navigator cadre that would plan the actual legs of the trip. And then there would be advance teams. The presidential advance teams are made up Secret Service, Marine One, Air Force One. And they would go in advance about usually a month and scope out the runways and do the small things like hotels. But they would get our fuel, lock the fuel up so it was guarded and not tampered with. And then when the trip actually happened, the advance agents would go back about 2 days before us. And everything would be coordinated through the advance agents. So, I mean, they would walk the entire taxi route with the wheel that measured the actual distances so we could always make sure that we were right on the second time when we blocked in.
Wow. I guess it would depend on the president's schedule, but typically, I guess, for pilot planning purposes, you'd like as much time to do your flight planning as possible, but how short of a turnaround could you do?
Well, we did one that, because it was a funeral in the Middle East, we reacted in about 4 hours. So we went from 9 o'clock at night being notified and then 1 in the morning takeoff it was Jordan at the time. So we can react pretty quickly, or sometimes we have 6 months in advance because it's APEC, something that's scheduled that the president always needs to attend.
Sure. Exotic spots that you had the opportunity to fly to that you can remember?
Well, New Zealand was one of the best, I thought. We've done Australia. We've pretty much all around the world. Africa we've been to. It's exotic. Yeah. Whether or not you liked it or not, it's a different story. But we went just about everywhere.
Cool. And let you put in a plug for what you're doing now that you've retired from the Air Force?
Yeah, I'm the director of aviation for Kohler Company over at in Sheboygan, or actually the plants in Kohler, Wisconsin. And we have a Global Express, a G4, and two Lear 45s, and we fly about 2,100 hours a year.
All right, and you still get to fly?
I do. Good. I still fly the Global and the G4.
Excellent. Greg Cahan, appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. And just think, it's just a little bit after 10 o'clock. You can spend the day watching airplanes now.
Yeah, if Mr. Cole were to allow that.
Great. Well, thank you again for being here. And you're listening to From the Stand on EIA Radio.